This is Two Dimension. My name is Don, and
my name is Al.
Unfortunately, Winston and Fenwick couldn't make it today, so it's just the two of us.
But fortunately for you, we have lots to say.
Yeah, somebody was just talking the other day about the show. This is, well, what's your theme going to be? We never have a theme.
No.
This is, we just kind of go in and talk, so that's why we got the title, No Direction.
Yep. Well, we are going to take a direction, I guess, in this show, and we're going to talk about, well, I'm going to pose the question to Don. Don, is it just me, or are comics too expensive these days?
Oh, yeah, they're really expensive. Like most of us, if you read comics, you probably go to a comic store, one particular one, you subscribe, and they give you a discount. Still quite a bit of money for what you get, but most of us, that's just what you love, so you do it. Some of the people we work with get interested in a certain comic or something, or they like comics in the past and want to. And what they keep complaining about was they go and just get a few comics, and it's the sum of the money is quite a bit. So yeah, $3 a pop is just way too much for what you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the comic shop yesterday, and I guess I have like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got a really cool Losers showcase, a lot of John Severin, you know,
oh, wow.
Late John Severin. It's really nice. A Monster Mag here, 3 comics. It's $40. You know, that's a lot of cash to put out.
Well, this is something I've talked about all the time, like a broken record. I love going on online sellers and buying books, you know. But I guess that's what scares me, was I'd go into bookstores and look at the price, and it's like, you know, some big art books or trade paperbacks sometimes has a price of $50. So I go look it up online and think, well, I can get this for $26 and, you know, free shipping sometimes.
Sure.
You can't beat it. I'm going to do that.
But yeah, definitely.
And you can find anything you're looking for, you know. But that's the thing is you go in a comic store and you don't want to pay that kind of money,
No, I kind of like to go in the comic stores to just impulse buy, you know.
Oh, right.
You know, a lot of times if you have in mind, that's great, and if you don't mind delayed gratification, even better.
Well, and the other thing is I like to go in a comic store because you might see something that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
You know, or you pick something up that you wouldn't order, but when you see it, well, this is good. You know, you discover something. The single issues I do like to go to comic stores and get, and the trades, I actually prefer buying them online. And I honestly think that that's where the industry's going, is trades, which would make sense. But
weren't you the one who was telling me that Paul Grist was saying that something about he doesn't like to do trades that quickly because he loses money?
What happened? Paul Grist, he's one of my favorite creators. He did Jack Staff, that comic Jack Staff. He used to publish it himself, and then he went over to Image and started doing it color. He also had a comic called Kane, a police series, which is just as good. And now he's doing a 6-issue miniseries called Mudman, which I really enjoy. But when I discovered him, I found a couple of his books in a cutout rack for $1. I thought, well, these are great. So I went online and I started ordering the trades. And I loved them. I prefer reading his work in trade. After I found him, I started subscribing to his single issues, and they're nice. I really enjoy on the single issues. He always has a write-up at the beginning, kind of a commentary. You know, he letters his own work. He inks it, letters it, you know, writes it, does everything. And he feels strongly about his own lettering instead of getting somebody to use a computer. Well, he does really nice work, and you can't tell the difference. But, somebody posted in Facebook about, I guess, his last 6 issues of The Weird World of Jack Staff is coming out sometime. And people were happy about it. Even though I bought the single issues, I'm going to buy the trade. And people, you know, made comments they can't wait for it. And, you know, they'd like to see more Jack Staff. And then he came back on and said, well, the problem is I can't afford to put out the trades if and not enough people are buying single issues. Which kind of threw me because I figured he's making enough money on the trades. You know, they're out. People can go back like I did. If you missed all the single issues, you can still go out and get the trades. So I'm not sure if he's just not making enough money off the trades compared to the single issues, or if it's just the single issues is a cash flow that keeps him going until the trades come out.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that much about how much. I guess he owns the character.
Yeah,
right?
It's his.
Is it Image who puts it out?
Or? Yeah, I was just reading after I found out who he was, and I looked him up online. He was talking. He had his own company called Dancing Elephant Press, and which I guess some of those books were available here because I've bought a couple in, you know, old stores and stuff, and you know, even some of the trades that were Dancing Elephant. But he said one day Image came to him and said, would you like to be published under Image? And he said, yes. And that's when Jack Staff went into color. I guess he could afford to do it in color. But his comment was that the sales of Jack Staff kind of leveled out. And I guess that's when he renamed it The Weird World of Jack Staff, trying to, you know, get interest. But from what I understand, he was playing around with drawings, and that's when he came up with Mudman. And then he just decided to do that. But I guess it's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess that happens in any book. Is first people jump on are excited, and then you're going to have some people that get off and some people that stay on.
Right.
But
the thing was, I mean, you know, I'm gonna do my old man routine here. But when I was a kid, when I first started out buying comic books, you could get two comic books for a quarter, and the penny would be for tax.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be getting, like, Jack Kirby, you know, Great Comics or whatever. It seemed like, you know, there was, like, I think you mentioned it before, cheap entertainment in a way.
Yeah, it was cheap entertainment.
Now it's not.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing is, there's so many other things you can do. People like video games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was kind of surprised that my daughter, when she was small, I was gritting my teeth through this whole thing, but for Christmas we got her a N64, a Nintendo 64. And I was kind of dragging my feet over it. My wife said, look, you know, she likes these. It's a present. Well, you know, the games are, what, $69 each? You know?
Right.
I'm having a heart attack. And I was never into video games. But then a friend of mine, you know, I love playing those games with her. You know, it was a blast. But a friend of mine made a comment, listen, that's cheap entertainment. I said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you say, you know, $69, $59, you know. After the game had been out a while, it'd go down to $40 and $39 and stuff. But he said, how many hours have you guys put in on that game? Well, yeah, when you look at that, you could buy the game once. And we played, I think it took us a year to get all the way through Mario 64, you know. And then we bought Zelda. And, it was just nothing but a blast. But you got the video games, you know, you can buy movies. How many times did you buy a comic book because it was an adaptation or a series of a movie or TV show you liked?
Yeah, Yellow Submarine.
Oh, yeah, Yellow, Fantastic Voyage.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, when Dell Comics was doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, we always, even if they didn't even look like the Star Trek
no,
comic,
did,
it didn't
no.
look like it, but,
no.
you know, you couldn't buy videotapes or DVDs of these shows.
Yeah.
There wasn't that many cable channels, you know, TV channels.
There weren't any back in that time.
So, you know, that was one reason. And enough people bought them, they could keep the cost down.
Right.
They talk about the circulation of some books, how high they were, and now it's like a dying thing.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Back then you had comics and you had the movies, and there wasn't that many other forms. But going back to video games, you don't even have to buy them anymore. You can just rent them and play them for a week or two and then return them and get another one. I mean, you can't rent comics, you know. I don't think you can.
It depends on the person, too, because my daughter wanted to rent some of those games, and we did. But I imagine some people are like masters at video games, and they can jump in
sure.
and drill through it, but we couldn't. And I'd much rather buy the game and have it and play through. And like Mario, it took us a year, and we went through every single section, did all the side games, did all the stuff built up. And then it was all finished. It was like a wonderland. They did a little show, and then the programmers thanked us for playing the game. And they said, we'd like to invite you back again. And they basically opened the game up to where you didn't die, and you had all these coins. And it was a nice touch, and we did. Every once in a while, we'd go in and, you know, play certain sections.
Right.
So they gave you something for it. And, you know, if you rent it, of course, I'm sure somebody could rent Super Mario and play it, you know, in 3 days and do everything we did in a year. But
yeah, and as comics, as the years went on, I remember when I first started buying them in the mid-60s, 12 cents. Then by 70, they went to 15. And then a few years later, they went up to 25. And then the giant size were 50s. I remember back in, like, what was it, 80s and early 90s. I think I remember the ones on nice paper on the paper they use nowadays, anyway, had gotten up to 175. I think that was by the mid-90s or whatever. Now it's like, what? Well, DC lowered their prices, but Marvel has too, but they're $3.99. That's a pretty big jump in 20 years. I mean, I've read things online. People are talking about, well, you know, you got to pay the artist, you got to pay the writers, the editors, the company's got to make some money. Nowadays, the paper and the print, the nice printing and the nice coloring cost more money to do. So obviously, everything drives up the price of it. But I think, you know, it's driven a lot of people away.
Well, it has, and that's the other problem, is it's not in the mainstream. I was just listening to guys talking. They're in Japan, and they were talking about Japanese comics, and they said in Japan you don't have comic stores. I had heard about there was some famous place in Tokyo. I think it's Tokyo. This is back in the 80s, but I guess they sold old trades. You know, you could find it, basically it was kind of treated as an antique store. But I'd always heard that they keep a lot of Japanese comics in publication, including all the Osamu Tezuka books. Mm. But I've learned they don't keep everything. I would give my back teeth to get a copy of Prince Planet. You know, and they call it something different there.
Yeah.
I saw somebody years and years ago selling one of those Japanese comics of Prince Plan on eBay, and I didn't want to sell my car to buy it, so.
Yeah.
But they say there's no such thing as a comic store in Japan. You basically get it at the places you used to get it here, you know, discount stores, you know, bookstores.
Yeah, back then we used to go to, what, drugstores had them, 7-Elevens had them, sometimes the
supermarkets had them.
Yeah, you had the spinner rack. I haven't seen a spinner rack in like 100 years, it seems like. Yeah,
well, that's where you got them. Bus stations used to have them.
Train stations. Yeah,
I used to ride the bus from Oklahoma City to Texas when I was a kid, and I just remember I'd go to the Oklahoma City bus stop, and I'd immediately go over to the little store they had, and they had a comic rack. I buy a few comics. Then we stopped in Chickasha, Oklahoma. I go in there. They always had a little lunch counter, and they always had a whole thing of comics. Mm-hmm. And then from there we go to Lawton, Oklahoma. I'd do the same thing. And sometimes there'd be another kid on the bus with you, and that was the first thing. As soon as the bus stopped in these places, we hit the comics.
Right.
And that's unheard of now, you know.
You know, another thing that I was thinking about was that back then, comics were for kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if comics today are for kids anymore.
No, they're not. When my daughter was small, she used to always come in with me, and she'd get upset because she'd want to get something, but there was nothing she wanted. If they had Archie, she'd get those, and once in a while, she'd find something. I might have told the story on the show before. One time at Comics World, they were in there kind of joking about Scooby-Doo. Well, they had I guess Marvel maybe did a Scooby-Doo comic for Hanna-Barbera.
Right.
But they had it was a stack of them. And then, you know, I picked out a few books I wanted, and then Holly asked if she could get a comic. I said, yeah. So, you know, she walked over and got Scooby-Doo. And I was kind of funny about that because those guys kept laughing about it. And then years later I found out Pat said they made a mistake. I guess the distributor sent him a whole pile of Scooby-Doos that he didn't order. And when he's going to send it back, so I'll just keep them. We don't want them back. It was a mistake. And he said, all of a sudden, I guess he must have had 50 copies of Scooby-Doo. And he said, out of the woodworks, kids were coming to that store, and they bought every one of those Scooby-Doos. He said it really helped him out a lot. So I don't know where these kids came from, but I wanted more of that. Well, like I said, Holly wanted it. And then every kid in our neighborhood wanted to borrow that comic book. You know, they kept talking about it. And one day she's wanting to bring it to school because all the kids kept hearing about it at school. I said, well, you can't bring that to school. But it was huge.
Oh, yeah.
And then Pat was, I used to get that Batman animated series comic, which, you know, it was an all-ages book.
They don't make that anymore?
No. They stopped.
Batman Adventures or whatever it was.
Yeah, they stopped long ago. They had four different series of it.
Okay.
But one day I came in to buy books, and Pat said, I hope you don't get offended when I tell you this. He says, but I guess he's going to have two or three spinner racks in the front of the store, and it's for kids' comics. And he said he was going to put the Batman Adventures there, so if I look for it, it'll be there. Well, I wasn't offended. I thought it was a good idea. But, you know, he had stuff like Archie comics that he put there. I think he put Usagi Jimbo in it, you know, which to me was a great idea. And these are books I love. Jack Staff could go there. But it'd be books that basically adults could like, but, you know, kids would go for.
Right.
But I don't know if that really worked out for him. But, you know, what parents could bring the kid in and buy one $3, $4 comic book?
Yeah, what is it going to take the kid like 10 minutes to read it, and then he's like, you know, what do I do now?
And what happens?
Keep rereading it over and over again, I guess.
And that's the other thing we talked
about.
Which
is cool. Yeah.
Well, Dallas mentioned those X-Men about how much happened in each issue, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, people keep talking about decompression, but I think that's a big difference now is that, you know, we're all in our 40s and 50s. When I started realizing there was a problem with this is when Dark Horse brought Nexus back, which I was excited. I love Nexus. And when I was buying it, the owner of the store was around my age, and he said, oh, man, that book is selling like hotcakes. This is, it's all the guys over 30. And when he said that, I thought, oh, that's right, I'm over 30. My God. And that's what scared me. I started thinking, you don't see kids coming to the store unless
rarely
they're coming with their parents, like my daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was back in the 90s, and I started thinking, that's a problem. And now, you know, nobody's 30. We're all 40 and 50, you know.
Yeah. I mean, my friend came up with an idea. It was like, we're like the kids from the 60s and 70s, and I don't know, maybe the people from the 80s, with the exception of the people who were readers, just kind of like, you know, maybe a lot of speculators came in. They kind of dropped the ball, realizing that because of all the stuff that happened with the Superman and all that stuff, that maybe they wasn't a good investment, so that generation might have gotten lost. And it seems like maybe some people that are into it now that might be coming into their 30s or, you know, have been raised with this style of comic book, because somebody, you know, put forth, well, why don't they, you know, just basically lower the production values, I mean, as far as paper and printing, and lower the price. And somebody said, well, if they do that, they may lose the people that grew up getting used to the way these comic books look now. So I don't know if there's any going back to cheap comic books at all.
The thing is, you'd have to put them out to where people can get them, you know.
All over the place, yeah.
But I'd heard John Workman, the letterer, he was talking about that. He worked for Heavy Metal, and he was talking about the distribution system. And he said that's one thing, I guess, at DC, Jeanette Kahn was always fighting, was the distributors that only put out half the books that they got, you know. Right. And comics were always the last after all the magazines and stuff. And she'd made a comment, well, if we just gave you half of the books, would you put them all out? She says, no, we just do half of that. So it was kind of corrupt. And there was some guy that got all the bookstores. You remember in the 80s, B. Dalton books.
B. Dalton's, and, yeah, in the malls.
Yeah, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess he did it. They said they'd try it for a year, and then after the year, they just dropped it. And the guy was brokenhearted. I said, but why? And he said it just wasn't worth their trouble. And he says, listen, if you gave us something that, you know, was slick and glossy, you know, we could charge a lot of money for. But it sounds to me kind of like what they do in Japan, even though they're not slick and glossy. But, you know, they got those thick phone book comics with a whole bunch of different stuff in it. And, you know, at the B. Dalton's, when they had the comics, how many times you go in there and all the comics are trashed? You know,
yep.
They're all bent and
exactly.
It was a mess. And, I mean, how much trouble is it to just keep going into fixing the comics all the time? And how much money are they making off of each issue?
Yeah, you're right.
So,
because when they were on the spinner racks in the old days, you didn't see them trash that badly that I remember.
Well, they didn't sit around that long most of the time.
No, after a couple of months, they'd be gone back.
Yeah, I guess they sent them back.
And they remember they used to rip the cover off and then, like, remainder them or whatever. They used to cut the top part of the cover with the name of the book and then just send that back in for a refund.
That's what they were supposed to do, and I guess sometime in the I don't know if it was the 70s. They said, look, we'll trust you. Just tell us. And they were getting resold in flea markets and used bookstores and stuff.
Well, I remember, I don't know if I have any of them anymore, but I remember back in the 70s, somebody gave me like a box full of them that all had the tops cut off. I guess, I don't know if the guy worked for a print shop or, I don't know where he worked from, but he just gave them to me. I was like, what's this? They're all, you know, he goes, well, these are the remaindered books. I was like, okay, well, at least I can read them. But, yeah, they don't do that anymore that I know of.
Well, I never saw that. I did have some comics without the covers, but it was like, it was an old comic of Dennis the Menace or Archie or something, and somebody read it so many times that it just came off the staple. You know?
I remember there was a record store in South Florida, and the guys, it was a mall store, and when, like, I guess when the Rolling Stone expired, the next issue came out or whatever, they would just rip the top of the cover off, send that for credit, and leave it there for people if they just wanted to grab it, take it home and read it and get a free copy of it. So that was the way you got, yeah, at least you got to read it sometimes, back when Rolling Stone was good.
Well, I do remember one time I was reading an Indica on one of the comics. It was, I don't know, DC or Marvel. This is back in the 70s. But it said if any part of the cover is missing, it's not to be resold.
Right.
Well, I never saw that. It might have happened in other. Well, you convinced me to buy that Batman Alex Toth comic at Colossal Comics, and part of the cover was missing, but that was where, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a great book.
Man. Oh, it is a great book. I don't mind. I'd rather have the cover on it, but it was still worth it, you know.
It's worth it.
And a lot of those Richie Rich comics I buy from that guy, the covers are just worn off. I mean, parts of it are still there, but it's not torn. It's just that it's a good sign. If you have a comic and it's been read a lot of times, it's a happy comic book, you know.
It's not one of these pristine mint things that they overcharge for you at the stores or whatever. They put in a slab or whatever the hell they do with these things now.
Yeah, well, the internet kind of killed that, I'm told. Yeah. That people, I guess the death of Superman, which killed a lot of the comic industry.
Yeah.
And they said that everybody's buying it thinking it was an investment in the future. And then they said that people came up, it's not really worth that much. And they started showing circulation and scarcity. And that's when a lot of the speculators dropped out of the market.
I think they dropped when they bought the book and they came back to you like a month later and said, how much is this? And you're like, we don't want to buy it. What? This is the investment for my son's, you know, college. What do you mean? It's like, sorry, we got enough of them already. Yeah. Anyway, when the Superman came back, that was the other. But you said something interesting before. Another aspect of it is the distribution. Well, comics are just, I mean, Marvel, DC, and I think Dark Horse have exclusive contracts with Diamond. So I don't know how much distribution they get outside of. I mean, I remember Barnes & Noble used to have comics.
Yeah, Borders did too.
Borders has them. Yeah, Barnes & Noble's does too, but I mean, the majority of them are just in comic shops.
Yeah, it's rare to find comics outside of a comic shop.
So if you don't get them outside of the. It's almost like, you know, so use, for lack of a better word, inbreeding or whatever, you know. You gotta get other people involved in it to, like, you know. But at any rate, it's probably not gonna, you know, lower the price at all. DC did their best, I guess. Cutting it, you know, from $299 to $299 or whatever.
Well, that's the thing. Like I said, as we talked about another show, a lot of retailers don't want to take a chance on a book. You and I were talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
We like to go on the comics, you know. You don't always want to pre-order a book because what if it sucks? And then
you're stuck for 2 months with it.
Yeah, you know, and you have to run and tell them quick, stop ordering this for me.
Yeah.
But that's what they're going through. They order the book and nobody wants it, and they got something they can't sell.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, I didn't even think about it, is having to subscribe to something, you know, sight unseen. Yeah. I mean, you're not sight unseen. You know at first what you're going to get, but if you're as interested in the character, and you're equally as interested in the writing team, and then they're gone. Right. It's like, okay, so now I got to buy these. And
well, that's the problem. I've never subscribed to Marvel and DC books. I mean, I don't really read too many of them, but there's sometimes a creative team will come on and I like it. But how many issues are going to be on it? Next thing you know, I'm getting some team that I don't want to buy.
Yeah,
and you're stuck with it, and unless you read every movement everybody makes, you know, and who's got time for that?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to go to a store and just, like, if they had the money to do it, just put on the shelf, like, almost everything that was released for the week from all the indie companies and Marvel and DC. That would be awesome, but that would cost so much money for the store to do that. It probably would be impossible unless you've got some super mega giant store that can afford to do that.
Well, here's when I was leaving work yesterday, I was talking to Dez. Hello, Dez.
Hey.
But he was asking me if I read electronic comics. No, I've got an iPod Touch. You know, I've gotten a couple of free ones off Comixology. But as Al's always talking about, you know, it's teeny tiny. Mm-hmm. And I have read a couple of... I ended up buying a trade through online of Action Philosophers, because they offered a free comic. And, you know, I read it, you know, and the panels would blow up on the iPad. Oh, this is actually pretty good. So, you know, I went and ordered the trade. It was good. But I don't normally. I kind of glance at it, you know, so this is nice. But I've never bought one. Maybe if I had an iPad, it'd be different.
Yeah, well.
But the problem is that's expensive. Are you still paying, I think, the same price for the comic book online?
$2.99 or $3.99 for a digital book?
Yeah, for a digital book. And, you know, I don't buy songs on iTunes. If I decide I like something, I go buy the CD or order the CD.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe if I was born 20 years later, I'd feel differently. But if I buy something, I want something. And,
something tactile, touch, feel.
Well, there was two times I bought albums on iTunes, and I didn't regret it. But it was two albums that I had them on tape. I've never found them on CD. I've looked them up online. They'd never come out. But iTunes had them, and they were $5.99 an album. Okay, so
yeah.
I bought them.
Yeah.
And that was fine. But I'd rather have something in my hand.
Yeah, for $2.99, would I want to have a download, or do I want to have an actual physical paper? Of course you want to have a paper book in your
hands. Well, the other thing is, I haven't had a problem with the iTunes one, but they come with stipulations. You can only put it on three computers. You can only do this.
Really?
Yeah, I don't...
Can you burn files from iTunes onto a CD?
Yeah, the way iTunes works, and I think they've relaxed some of it, but if you buy a song on iTunes, you can authorize, I don't know if it's three computers, it used to be three, it might be five now. But you can put it on three different computers, and you can burn it to three different discs to have a backup file. And I kept thinking, well, how would you know? How would you know, you know, or devices? How would they know? Well, I found out. You know, when my daughter had an account on my computer, some of those songs went over and said, all right, well, this is on two computers. You only have one more. And then I burned it on a disc one time so somebody could listen to it. I said, all right, you're burning on this, and you only have two more times. Well, I'm sorry. If I bought it, I should be able to do what I want. I'm not selling it to somebody. I'm not recording it to everybody on the whole planet. But if I went on a CD to loan it to somebody, that's my business, you know.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah, I mean, well, who are they to tell you? Have you bought it?
Well, evidently. You know, that's the record industry, which I understand protecting your interests, but, you know, I paid for it. I like to buy DVDs.
Sure.
You know, that's
and
one
CDs
of my...
CDs also.
Oh, yeah, well, it's fun.
You run out of room sometimes.
Well, yeah, that's the issue.
It's a whole different story.
It is one thing I think about. It is nice having MP3s and MP4s if you have a device to play it on.
Right.
You can bring everything with you. My brother, you know, he's a music teacher, and when MP3 was a new technology and the whole record industry was up in arms, you know, my brother's a member of the union, you know, he's all in the musicians union, and if he hears of anybody recording it, you know, and pass it on. I said, listen, the musicians that did that and the songwriters aren't getting paid, you know. He's one of them. He feels that way. But one of his, another instructor, he said he traveled. You know, he'd go to different universities and schools and teach. And he basically had a whole case full of CDs he's having to lug around so these students could hear this stuff. And he said he was so happy. This is back in the 90s, early 90s. He could rip all of his CDs onto MP3 files, keep them on his laptop, and then when he'd go to the school, he'd just carry a laptop open up, and he could play all these symphonies and, you know, classical pieces instead of carrying, you know...
bunch of CDs.
Yeah, 300 CDs. So, I was just thinking, that is nice. You can keep all your movies, comic books, and, you know, stuff, as long as you have enough area to back them up. But man, you could keep everything in a backpack and live sure. like David Carradine did in the old Kung Fu series.
Sure. Now, my next question to you, Don, is, so is that what the future of comics is going to be, just digital?
I don't know. I keep hearing people say they don't see print ever leaving. I want to say I have trouble believing it, too, because I do like print.
Me too, yeah.
I love books. I love coming over to your place and looking at all your stuff. I love going to Rook's house. And it's fun when you see your friend's stuff.
It is, because they got different things. And you're like, oh, I don't have that. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. It's fun when your friends come over and see your things because it renews your interest. Not that you ever get tired of it, but sometimes you don't think about it. My favorite thing at work was when everybody had CD players. You know, me and one of my friends would bring in a couple of CDs out of our collection. And then we come in and pass it to that person. And that's where I discover a lot of bands that I wasn't aware of. And he would do the same thing. And some of the stuff I'd listen to, you know, was 80s stuff that he had never touched. Because this was kind of fun. And every once in a while he'd write something down. And I'd write something down and we'd buy, you know.
Right.
But it was a blast. And then after we were doing it, a couple of other ladies did. And when I say this, everybody listened to different kinds of music. This one lady, they always called it a Beverly disc, because Beverly always listened to the Fifth Dimension and Carly Simon, Joni Mitchell, you know, but it was all
early 70s.
Yeah, and fun. To me, it was fun, kind of light stuff, you know. Russ liked, you know, Cream, you know, a lot of guitar players, George Thorogood, you know, harder stuff. And next thing you know, the CD circle was like, I think it was about 6-7 people. And one day it was fun because somebody brought in Pink Floyd, The Wall, which I haven't heard. You know, high school, then when that album came out, everybody on the whole planet bought that album. You turn on the radio, that's all you heard. Everybody, what an album, you know. But it was like the soundtrack of 1979 to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody brought that in. I haven't heard it since I left high school. And I was kind of excited about it. And then every time somebody got a chance to get that in the circle, it was their turn. They say, stop talking, I'm going to go listen to The Wall. And they'd run over and grab it. And everybody in the circle was excited. And that was fine. And then I remember one day a friend of ours we work with is from Columbia. And I went to give my CD to somebody else. He goes, Don, I brought some of mine too. She was wanting to join in. And all of hers was all Spanish music, you know, merengue salsa.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's when I learned who Shakira was, which was a good day. So. But that was fun. But then when we all started getting iPods, it wasn't the same because you can't pass off your stuff. I love my iPod. I don't go anywhere without it. But I can't just say, hey, Al, listen to this. You know?
Plug into my iPod and listen to this.
Right. You know, you can't do that. But it was nice when you had a CD. You could, oh, here, check it out.
At least you get some album cover, you know. And all
oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what in the
or
liner notes,
cover.
You know.
I mean, when you went from album, which was like artwork, to CD, it was okay. It's a little harder on the eyes, but then now it's like nothing. Not well, no. If you get an iPad, I think you still get the album cover if you download.
Yeah,
it.
Well, you can. iTunes has a thing if you have an old album, you can if you don't buy it through them, you can rip it and then say find album artwork and it'll come up.
Yeah, right.
So they're real flexible about it, but you don't get all the liner notes. You just get the cover. And that was one of my favorite things. You pull out the paper, insert, you know, and read that. And sometimes they have the song lyrics. They tell you who played on what song and what kind of guitar.
Yeah, sure, all the info, Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, Dallas. Hey, Dallas. he's doing his web comic, and I guess when he's done, or at least he's got 40 pages of it, he wants to actually put it out in print.
Yeah, that's his plan.
So that could be a future of comics, you know. I mean, give it away for free at the beginning, and then if you really like it, then, you know, publish it, and hopefully there's enough people out there that'll, you know, buy your copy. I mean, the music industry seems to be going that way. Not that they want to give anything away for free, but it seems like, you know, you get all these downloads, and you got to pay for them, but if you like it, you go out and buy the album, or you go see the group live, and then they make, you know, more money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, there's some comics. My daughter, Dark Horse, put out it was like a manga, but I think they were Americans that did it, but it looked like manga. It's called Mega Tokyo.
Right.
And she saw it in one of the trades at the store and wanted it. I think she ended up getting two of the books. It was nice, but that was a web comic. And after they put out so much, they put it in one of those, you know, anime trades,
right.
Manga trades.
Right. I mean, Marvel and DC will probably still be putting out print because of all the... I mean, there's still a lot of old school people that aren't going to go for the digital thing. But in the future, for the younger kids, I don't know. You know, I mean, and that's what we're talking about, what the future of... Well, we're talking about comic book prices, and we're talking about now we're going into, like, what's going to happen in the future. Will that even affect the price of them? I mean, if you tell me that, okay, you can get a download for, like, $1, or you can buy the paper one for $3, well, then I'd have to think about it sometimes, you know. But they don't do that right now.
Well, again, when Dez was talking to me, asked me questions about electronic comics, there's two things with it. It could pick up, you know, if, you know... The tablets, they got the Kindle Fire. I keep seeing on TV all these other kind of tablets phone companies have.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's where it's going. And I was fascinated when these things came out. I remember magazines. That was my favorite thing, was to buy magazines. We all did, you know.
Sure, yeah.
When you went to any kind of store, they had a huge magazine rack with all kinds of stuff. And people used to buy it for the photos and the artwork and all that. Now you go into some gas station and they have maybe 5 or 6 magazines and every one of them look the same, you know.
Yeah.
Newspapers used to be fantastic. The
St.
Pete Times is one of the best papers I ever saw. They had fantastic layouts. They had their own illustrators, photographers, and they used to always have giant pictures. Sometimes they still do.
Sometimes.
But, you know, it was always like, you know, people walking around with their kids out in the palm trees and on the beach, you know, and it was just fun.
I'm actually surprised people still get the paper, because you can get it for free online, I think, anyway. I mean, I was looking up an article from here recently, and I just found it online. I missed the paper. I was going to go out and buy the day's paper to get it, and I couldn't get to it, so I just found it online, so.
Well, sometimes my dad worked at the paper in Oklahoma City, and he sent me an article. One of my best friends and a roommate in college, his family owned a bakery, a huge bakery in Oklahoma. And they did an article on it, so he sent it to me. Well, he said in the newspaper there, they had a photo of them, you know, on the cover, and had a big write-up. Well, he sent it to me, you know, online. There was no pictures, which I would have liked to have seen them. But it had an article, but it was only so much, and it said, you know, the rest is on, you know, the Daily Oklahoman.
So
sometimes,
okay.
I don't think they're always, but I think most of the time they're abridged.
And they tease you a little bit. You have to read the rest of it.
Yeah, but that's fine. Back, it was years ago in the 90s, I was getting fed up with something going on in the paper. You know how the media always just, they hit something, they stay on it and beat it till it's dead.
And like today?
Yeah, well, it's always. But at one point I made a comment at work. I said, I wish they'd stop doing this. I'm tired of this. And my friend said, well, all you have to do is stop reading the paper. She was that way. She'd feel strongly about something, and she would just stop doing it.
Well,
but when she said that to me, it was almost like, why don't you just close your eyes and never look at anything again? I read the paper cover to cover. My wife subscribed to it. I get the paper each day, and I'll be honest, I got it for the comics. But I read all the articles, you know, I read all the, you know, what was going on in the area. I always enjoyed it. And I just couldn't imagine not reading the paper. Well, once I got the internet at one point, I just stopped.
Yeah,
exactly. Getting my information.
Me too, yeah.
But the thing was, the information I'm looking up is stuff that I want to find. I'm not reading about what's going on in the world or anything. Once in a while you find it. But I'm not getting such a wide scope as the newspaper was giving me. You know, I was always reading local news, national news, world news. And, you know, when I go online, I'm getting the narrow thing. I'm basically looking up cartoonists and rock bands and, you know, authors and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just listening to an interview with Raquel Welch recently, and I looked her up. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
And she's still beautiful. She's 70 years old, and she's still beautiful. That's amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my hat's off to you, Raquel Welch.
Great genetics.
But, you know, I'm not getting the wide scope I used to get in the paper, so I don't know. But we stopped subscribing at one point. I never read it. My wife says it's not worth it. And next thing you know, she started subscribing. She likes to do the puzzles. She likes to do the jumble. She likes to do the Sudoku. And there's a couple of times for Christmas I'd throw in her stocking a Sudoku book or a jumble book. And she says, these are kind of lame. You know, she'd do them, but they're not the same. She said, the ones in the paper are really good. Hmm. And she always reads the paper. Every once in a while, I'll mention something. You know, you'll tell me about, oh, honey, that's in the paper. What? It's always in the paper. She knows about it beforehand. And she'll clip something out and give it to me. She says, this is going on. Well, I don't catch that, even though I'm on the internet. She's always clipping the coupons, you know. If we're looking for a car, she pulls that out and looks at information on. So that's why you get the paper. There's a lot of information. I just don't make time to do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you go online and you got Yahoo and you got all these other Drudge or Huffington Post or whatever. You got all different points of view. I don't know how many of them are real journalists, but you get different points of view.
Yeah, that's it.
All over the place.
It's not as even-tempered, and sometimes I have trouble believing what I'm reading online.
Yeah, you know? The older you get, I think sometimes, for me anyway, the harder it is for me to believe a lot of things that I was told before. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah, but look at us now. You know, on this show, we're not a news show. We're just four guys that like to talk about comic books, and we're doing this on the fly.
Yeah.
And we're always talking about things, and later on I found out that was wrong. So that's kind of the internet, you know.
Just, yeah, I guess.
It's not what we understood it was or how we remember it was, but it's not always exactly right, you know.
We're doing the best we can. We're not trained professionals, even though we play them on TV.
So that's why you don't always trust what you read on the internet. Somebody may honestly believe that or feel that way. But it's probably not exactly the whole story.
But you mentioned, you remember you said before something about the newspaper, the wide scope that they had.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of the same with comics. I remember back then, you know, you had your war comics, your romance comics, your superheroes. You know, and nowadays it's predominantly superhero.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you do get other genres here and there, and they're like, you still get your Archies. You may get a war comic here once in a while. But the scope is narrowed, you know, a lot in these things. I guess it's what sells the best, like you said. But has that affected, you know, the people buying comics? I don't know. You know, there are less people buying them because they don't have such a broad scope. I mean, some people might not want to read about Batman. They might want to read a historical book or something like that. You know.
Well, a friend of mine, one of my students at the karate school, when she found out I like comics, she said, yeah, I do too. And that's when I learned that Wilson's had all his back issues for
a
dollar.
Right.
The way she got into it, she was a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. And then she found out that, I guess that's J. Michael Straczynski. Is that true?
Yeah, he's the writer. Wasn't it Joss Whedon who wrote
that? Oh, okay,
Buffy?
Joss Whedon. It's whoever wrote that, I guess, wrote the X-Men for a while.
Yeah, I think it's Whedon.
When she found out he wrote comics, she looked into it. And that's when she got, I guess, the X-Men. She read those and she liked them. And then, I guess she's looking for other stuff he wrote, and then she went on. And at one point, she picked up a Batman, and said, this is good. So she started reading those. And that's where it came. She was going every way, but I talked to her recently. I guess she doesn't read them anymore. She had a kid, you know, and she's busy. But the thing is, you have to actively seek it out. And I don't know. Again, a lot of the comics they have now, they're not written for kids. Kids aren't interested in them.
No. And then my other point is like, since now Marvel is Disney and DC's been Warner's for a while, they just, I guess I'm going to be controversial. They're basically just pimping these characters just to make movies and amusement parks.
I
hate to say that, but, yeah.
Well, they say all the, you know, the comics creates big industries for other people. But the characters themselves don't make very much money in comics.
It seems like it. Maybe that's why the price is going up, too.
Well,
they're not
the
selling as much.
The shirts and the movies and that kind of stuff is what
makes movies are what's making the money.
Well, all this stuff. Toys make a lot of money.
Merchandising, yeah. Amusement parks, yeah.
But
that's just the mainstream, the big two.
Now, my daughter, when she was in high school, she did have friends. They come over to the house for parties and stuff, and they were comic book guys. They read American comic books.
Cool.
You know, a lot of the kids read the manga. I'm told, I don't know, but I'm told that not that many kids are reading manga anymore. But
no, really?
How many times? Well, we went to, what was it, Books a Million the other day? And there was kids in the aisleway reading all the manga books.
Yeah, there sure is a lot of manga everywhere.
Well, it is. And I was always kind of happy about it to read them. But, you know, again, the manga, it's a nice, when you buy it, it's a nice, thick, mm-hmm. you know, book. And,
yeah,
you know, after you finish reading, you stick it on your shelf and it looks good. And then somebody wants to read it, here you go, you know. My daughter last year in the dorm, I guess the girl that lived next to her started reading some of her series, and she was coming over, and then she read the last book. I guess by that time my daughter had about eight or nine of them, and she goes, "You don't have the next one? Oh, let me go buy it, and I'll give it to you." And she says, "Well, it's not out yet." But, you know, the girl was so excited to read them, you know, that she wanted to go get the next one and just pass it off to my daughter.
Right.
But, you know, again, you can just go to the bookstore and buy those. You don't have to go to a comic specialty shop.
And the other thing, too, the point that I was is the economic reason. I mean, if you're in a bad economy and you're out of work or you're not, or you haven't had a raise and everything's going up, you know, food's going up, you're going to have enough money to buy these bad boys. So that could be hurting. That could be, it might not drive the price up, but it might kill the industry even more, you know? That's another thing.
And the digital books, when Dad was asking me, I guess the plus to it is the stuff that you and I are talking about we'd like to see.
Right.
If it's digital, everybody can find it. You know, no matter where you're at, and enough people could buy it to probably support the book, even if it's a lower seller. But the problem is, it's not going to pick up if you're having to pay this much money for it. That's kind of expensive, you know.
No, and I'm sure the comic shops are not going to be real thrilled if it just goes digital.
They're not. And I know when DC announced that big 52 and same day and date digital, I remember Pat was upset.
Yeah.
But I've heard other people come on and talk about it, that's why the comics industry hasn't gone digital by this time, is because they're scared to death about the comic shops.
Yeah, putting all these comic shops out of business, because that's their bread and butter.
But some shops, like Yancey Street, they seem to be doing really well, but they're doing all kinds of stuff. They sell comics, but every time I go in there, they have all kinds of stuff, T-shirts, glasses, you know.
Yeah, they
like
can afford it, I guess. Well, Pat, it was at Pat's the other day. Apparently he had some sales, and he did really good. He's been doing pretty good business lately, so maybe it is picking up. Good for him.
You never know. I remember one time, I've said this before, Pat was saying at one of his original locations that, you know, the mother would be coming out of the grocery store with kids, and the kid would point and want to go in the store, and she'd go, "Don't, that's a bad place."
You
know, and I think, yeah, it's...
Well, you know, it's funny, I was talking to him about it last night. When he moved into the new store, it was next to a Christian Science reading room, and like within about a month and a half or two, they asked Pat Comics World if he would mind moving to another stall so they could expand their reading room. And Pat said, "No, I just got here. It just took me forever to, you know, set up. I'm not going to move." And the Christian Science reading room has moved to a different location.
I thought you were going to say they gave him a hard time approaching.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. I think he said they wanted to have the reading room, and then they wanted to have like a chapel, whatever.
It makes sense.
But he was telling me that the guy on the other side, the cart guy, said they've been here for 10 years and they never said anything. So I'm wondering if, like, a lot of people might think that comic book store is a bad place. I don't know. That's a whole different ball of wax or whatever. You know, that's neither here nor there, but. Yeah, so these just some ideas some things that I've read about comics. You know, I think they're overpriced. I think I talk to a lot of people that tell me that they would love to be able to get back into it, but they just, you know, they have kids now, they have families, they have to work hard. I mean, one thing that one of our coworkers said was what got him out of books was getting like a Spider-Man book and then having to go out and buy every Spider-Man book in order to follow the storyline. Because maybe I don't want to read Web of Spider-Man. Maybe I don't want to read Peter Parker. Maybe I just want the story to be in here. So, you know, all of a sudden he's buying all these books and they're piling up and he hasn't read it. And he's like thinking, well, wait a minute. I've got $25 worth of books here that used to cost less than that. And I'm not reading them. And that's another...
You know, it's the first time I ever saw that. I bought it. This is back when I was a kid. I think I was 12. This must have been 74. And I bought Avengers. Well, you and I talked. It was when Bob Brown drew it.
Yeah,
those
are great.
Finished it. And then when the story finished, he says, or maybe it was a Fantastic Four, it was anyways around that time, but at the end of the book, it said, okay, starting next issue in Fantastic Four and ended in Avengers so-and-so, you know, had the number. It was the wedding of Quicksilver and Crystal. Well, that's cool. It goes from Fantastic Four to Avengers, so that's kind of neat. I didn't realize it was two issues. I was thinking it was like a bunch of issues. But I never saw either one of the issues and never bought it. You know, well, that was back when distribution, you never really knew what was going to show up at your store, you know. But I never saw them. But, yeah, I've never cared. As long as the same creative team was working on it, that was fine. And
oh, yeah.
If the character went to some other book, fine. Unless I liked the creative team, I didn't borrow
it. Yeah, it was a creative team for me. I mean, the characters are great and everything like that, but I always liked the guys who wrote and drew and, you know, colored and this stuff better.
All right, well, it's, I guess, time for a music break. And we haven't played him in a while. This is my friend Pierre Legault. Take it away.
Pierre Legault.
And I don't think you can currently buy the CD anymore, but it's too bad because you should be able to.
What was the name of the CD?
Restoration. Restoration.
Okay, cool.
He's. I looked him up online because I'd like to put a link of every artist, you know, that we play. And he used to have a site. He doesn't any longer. But or he didn't when I was looking it up. But I did find him. I guess he's played with some other people. So you might be able to get it on iTunes. I didn't look him up on
or that. Amazon.
Yeah, or Amazon, but I think it's out of print. But it's a restoration. I think he had another one that I've never heard. But
cool.
Anyway, I'll try to put some of that information up.
So Don, I think we should talk about Unstable Molecules, your interpretation of it, part two.
Well, Al brought up on the last time the four of us were together, he had been reading it. I didn't realize, reading the book, it reminded me of when Humanoids is putting out the heavy metal comic book. There was a comic strip about zombies and some kind of zombie hunter. It was kind of funny. When I was reading Unstable Molecules, I said, I like this art style. It reminds me of that old story.
Hmm.
Come to find out, it was the same artist. It was
Guy Davis? Oh.
Yeah. I'll bring those heavy metals in.
A friend
of mine,
really?
She gave those. They were really nice comics, and they had all kinds of different stories, and you know, creators from all over, France, you know, United States. And but Guy Davis did it. It was kind of a goofy strip about this zombie hunter, and that's when I started finding zombies got real popular in the United States. And, never a big fan of them, but I never hated them. And like I said, the story was kind of funny. But
how long ago was
it? Was in the early 2000s.
Oh, okay, so it was a few years ago. Right?
Yeah, but it was heavy metal. I really enjoyed those. And my friend she stopped reading comics just because of the cost, as we talked about earlier. And then I guess her friends that did read comics all moved away, so it wasn't as much fun. And she was trying to make space, and she brought me a pile of these heavy metal comics. She goes, well, you like these, take them. Okay.
Sure.
But I didn't know who that Guy Davis was, and I kept thinking about it. I looked it up. Sure enough, it was him. But the Unstable Molecules, it worked on so many different levels. As everybody listening to the show knows, I'm a huge Fantastic Four fan.
Me too.
I don't read them all the time, but I love the Jack Kirby work, and I've loved the George Perez, the Rich Buckler. You know, I read it when John Byrne did it. You know,
John Buscema did a few.
Yeah, I always bought.
Remember that one issue John Romita did right after Kirby left, wasn't it?
I think he did two issues.
Is it right after Kirby left? Yeah.
I think he finished.
A story.
Yeah, I think 103 had part of a story that Jack Kirby started.
Yeah.
And he finished it, and then he did the next one. That was a funny story to that, because when Jack Kirby left, John Romita stood there and goes, well, who's going to do that one? Because, you know, Jack Kirby was doing, by that time, he's only doing two books, and that was Fantastic Four and Thor. And Stan Lee didn't even look up. He says, you are. And John Romita, it sounded kind of strange because John Romita was drawing Spider-Man, which was Marvel's number one selling book. And Fantastic Four was not. I don't know if it was second or if it was down the line. But John Romita didn't argue. He said, okay. So he drew two issues. And sales went up. That's
really?
What they always talk about. The sales that John, you know, the two issues John Romita drew, the sales went up on. And then John Romita went back to Spider-Man, and John Buscema took over. And when that's questioned, John Romita says, well, I think people were just curious as what it was going to look like without Jack Kirby and bought him. Well, I've always liked John Romita, and hearing that, I like him even better. You know, I don't know if people are buying it because they just like John Romita better than Jack Kirby, or if that was true, they were wanting to see it. But cool statement, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, the Fantastic Four is something that every once in a while I'll see something and pick it up. I've always wanted to read it. I just, you know, you've read enough of them, I guess.
Yeah, right. You know the characters pretty well.
But the Unstable Molecules, I've always heard people talk about this book. I've never actually seen it. But it tells the whole story. Reed Richards is a professor at a university. And he's kind of absent-minded. He's so heavy into his work. And then his girlfriend is Sue Storm, who's raising her kid brother. And that's the first time I've ever seen anybody draw Johnny Storm. I guess they were called Sturm.
Sturm, yeah. I think the writer's name is James Sturm.
Yeah, James Sturm.
Yeah.
But they drew him as a kid, you know, an adolescent boy, and he acted like an adolescent boy. And she's basically dealing with that because their parents are gone, and she's trying to raise him, and then dealing with an absent-minded professor.
Who she's engaged to, I guess.
Yeah, and then at one point, Reed calls her, because I guess there was a party that he was supposed to host, and the other professor said, well, I already talked to you about that. Oh, okay. He didn't even give it a thought. So he called Sue up and said, can you take care of it? Well, she got upset because she had all these plans and dealing with her brother and everything else, but she did contact it. You know, she did take care of it. And then they end up going to Ben Grimm's. He was running the gym. You know, same thing. He was a fighter pilot in the military, knew Reed from college. But a completely different thing. She brought Johnny over there, and as soon as Johnny saw him, he started smiling and got all excited. And she goes, how does he do that? And it was basically telling the stories of each one. It also explained the 60s, because Sue's neighbors were from her mother's friends. They were older people. And they had kind of the 40s sensibility to them. And then some of the neighbors were younger people, and they were, you know, had a change in sensibility, a change in thought process, and you could see these generation gaps and what was going on. And just a lot of levels. They weren't beating it over your head. They were just showing it. But, man, this just never stops. And the ending really surprised me.
Right, yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, one of her neighbors, they said he was a book illustrator, and one of the older ladies made a comment that he drew comic books. And then everybody got embarrassed. Kind of find out Jack Kirby and Stan Lee was one of the neighbors. And a couple of the other neighbors over there was a letterer and I think a colorist or inker or something. But what surprised me was the big party that they put together. At one point, Sue invited her neighbor, and she goes, oh, well, thank you very much. She says, but I don't think they'd fit in. He's over there with all of his friends right now. Oh, tell them they're all welcome. So the cartoonists came over, and they're all kind of wearing tropical shirts, you know, comfortable clothes. But one of the guys, I think it was the letterer, he was wonderful. He was talking to the next-door neighbor that was such a sour woman. And
right, yeah.
He really had the woman happy. He was just talking to her and treating her like a human being, and, you know, she was pretty happy and having a good time. And it was a whole mix of people. Ben showed up, you know, and there's all these other professors, and everybody seemed to be getting along. And Reed shows up, I guess, to finally propose to Sue. And then what happens?
Oh, yeah.
We're not
going to tell you, but yeah.
I'm not going to give the rest away, but the ending worked on so many different levels. And there was a photo they had of the four of them. And it had, you know, Reed and Ben Grimm in the back standing up and Johnny and Sue in the front. And Ben had his hand on Johnny's shoulder. And both Ben, Johnny, and Sue are pointing or staring straight at the camera and smiling like they're all together. And Reed's standing there behind him next to Ben, but he's looking over to his right, away from everybody, not really paying attention. To me, when I read that the first time, I said, well, that's kind of weird. It's like Reed's just kind of passing by. And that's one point he makes in the book, was, you know, unstable molecules. He was basically saying science is only there for textiles. I guess that's what he was always doing, unstable molecules for textiles.
Hmm.
Which is what their uniforms are made of. That's why you can stretch and catch on fire.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they were made
that,
from unstable molecules.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Which was also what the Fantastic Four became, because of the gamma rays?
Yeah, well, no, we went into space.
Cosmic rays.
So.
But it made them unstable. But it was also talking about relationships and everything else.
How unstable they could be. You know?
Exactly. And at one point he said he always thought he was an observer, seeing all the unstable things coming together, and he realized he was just as much a part of it. And it keeps going back to that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized how he was to everybody else. The thing was, is after the story was finished, it just sounded to me like that was the inspiration to do a Fantastic Four comic book. But there was all these notes. I guess they actually became the Fantastic Four?
I'm not sure if that's what, you know, it says at the end or not. I got the impression that it was just they were the inspiration for the Fantastic Four for Stan and Jack. I don't know if the book says at the end they actually became the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, see, I couldn't understand.
It's open-ended, I think. It seemed to me that way, anyway.
Well, like I said, I read Al's copy, and I read every single bit of it, and it made me want to draw.
Yeah, well, there was also like a comic within the comic of that Storm Girl or whatever
Vapor Girl.
Vapor Girl that was based on, I guess, Sue.
The cartoonist had the hots for, which I think his wife found out about. In the back matter talk. Johnny was always reading those. I guess Johnny and his friend were always talking about doing comics together. They were making stuff up. I'm going to pick up a copy. I absolutely love that book.
It's a pretty cool book.
Well, the writer...
Sturm.
Yeah. What was the story with him? There was a story about that.
I don't even remember. I got it for Guy Davis, whose work I started to be getting into. But was he a professor also, or some kind of a historian, I think?
I'm not sure. I don't think he was a regular comic writer.
No, he's not.
And, it was on the subway. I guess he always had an idea for something, and he ran into Joe Quesada. I think I may be getting it wrong.
Okay, well, we'll figure it.
But it was an interesting backstory, and I guess he basically in conversation, I said, why don't you do it? And that's where the project came about. I don't know if he's written anything else, but...
Not that I know of.
Again, it's a book I've heard about, I've heard people talk about, and I've read people making reference. But I never paid attention. I probably wouldn't have paid attention, but when Al mentioned it, he lent it to me, and now I want to buy it. So,
well, I got it at Wilson's that one day, so.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself. But see, that's what I mean. I walked over that place before you did and looked at all the trades, and I didn't bother with it.
Yeah, well, you can find it reasonably. It's a pretty thin book, so you can probably get it reasonably.
Good
price on Amazon.
I will get it. I always have a list of stuff I want.
All right. Well, I guess that's it, man, for this episode.
That's enough time.
So. Yeah, we were away for a while, and we're back again.
We were going to wait. A lot of things are going on. There's a change, and again, it's like everybody on the planet. We got extremely busy, everybody. So hopefully we won't be missing any more weeks. And if you're having trouble getting some of the shows on the site, we're trying to repair that. So,
yeah,
we'll let you know more in the future.
And maybe we can get some commentary by Dallas on this show. We asked him to do it, so we'll see what happens.
All right, take care, everybody.
All right, later.